Up next, we have Carrie F. Carrie, if you'd go ahead and unmute yourself, please.
Yes, hi, Dr. Pai. Thank you so much for your wisdom today. I'm wondering if you could share some insights about MS, multiple sclerosis. You had mentioned about, you know, the anti-inflammation and all these different drugs. Could you suggest you know, it's a very scary thing because you can be fine and working and then all of a sudden it attacks, you know, different parts. So if one is taking one of these B-cell depleting disease modulating therapies, you know, like rituximab or Ocrevus, what is a path to sort of try to get off of one of these medications and to take a more natural approach, or just in general, some advice that you might share with me, please.
So what we usually do with great questions. So it is challenging because once you remember the benefit of the biologics is that they, you know, they squash everything. So for most people who have like an acute flare, it's like, you know, you got to calm it down. So I never blame anybody for taking a biologic. However, it's not the long-term, in my opinion, the not long-term solution because people don't have a TNF-alpha blocker deficiency. You know what I'm saying? Like, so there's a little bit of like, well, what's causing my body to attack itself to the central nervous system of MS? One of the things though, aside of taking, you know, what I do is like when we look at the inflammatory triggers, because everybody will have a food sensitivity, looking at microbiome, we fix all that. Then once we balance all that, we give them on the natural anti-inflammatories, then we tell them to work with their rheumatologist or the person who's giving the biologics or the primary, their specialist. And they look at, can they now space out the doses or lowering, you know, like, so instead of the frequency, oh, once a month, I'm getting this, now it's every, you know, 2 months. Or, and as long as they're monitoring their inflammatory markers and their symptoms, then we actually eventually end up weaning them off. They don't need it. One of the things I would have you look at for anybody that has MS, Parkinson's, stroke, autism, cerebral palsy, something called neuroacupuncture. If you go to neuroacupunctureinstitute.org, that's something that's also mentioned in my book. It's a special type of acupuncture, and there's about 100 doctors that we've trained. We have a nonprofit company called Neuroacupuncture. And in fact, last week, a documentary film was just released called A Return to Life by Doug Dirth. He's a famous director, and I'll be in there, by the way, yay. But it's something that you'll see with MS, Parkinson's, stroke. It's a new type of technique that Dr. Jason and Linda Howe, they're the world's experts in neuroacupuncture. They actually live here in New Mexico. He's ranked as the third most expert acupuncturist in all of China, lives here in the United States. But we do wonderful research, and that's something that you want to find if you go to neuroacupunctureinstitute.org, and you can go to the there's a global directory of practitioners, because now we're trying to train people all around the world, acupuncturists, DOMs, and MDs, and try to find someone in your area of training. That's something that actually can help almost immediately. It's something that is safe and effective. And so if you're having like balance or weakness or, you know, stability problems and all the stuff like that, it's something that, you know, more than any of the drugs, more than any of the supplements, because those are like long-term things of looking at healing the body. But can I get someone who's like, oh yeah, I'm having imbalance and you know, instability or foot drop or those, that sometimes one or two or three or six treatments can improve it fantastically, where the person's like, wow, I can walk better, I can drive better, my vision. And you'll see it with the documentary, you know, MS person, which will, you know, I won't get into detail, but even with optic vision problems, you know, wheelchair, literally like 6 or 7 sessions now, completely visions back, out of the wheelchair. I mean, these are things that sound like almost, you know, carnival like, you know, stories, but they're actually true documented cases, because it's something, remember, the body's immense ability to heal. And there's wonderful natural therapies that have been used in other cultures that we just don't know or have privy to have the knowledge about. And we're here to share that with you. So I would look at that as one of the immediate things. And then again, if you want to do a consultation, I'd be glad to help you through the rest.
Thank you so much for all of that, Dr. Pai. And again, just a little note for those of you just tuning in now for the 11 a.m. Eastern lecture with Dr. Caldwell Esselstein. We expect him to be coming out very shortly. Dr. Pai is being extremely gracious with his time. And if you're ready for another one, I got another one for you.
Sure.
Great. Thank you so much. And so we're going to ask Linda to go ahead and unmute. Hi, Linda. Linda, just want to make sure you hit that unmute button. I think I sent you an unmute request. There we go. Hi, Linda.
Hi. A quick question. Are you familiar with interstitial cystitis? And if you are, I've had it for an incredibly long time, for like 45 years. And I'm wondering if you have any recommendations.
Yeah, so very difficult to treat for most patients, because what we end up finding out is that most of them have, so the inflammation in the bladder and the urethral area is actually what we find with at least the complicated patients that have, like, say, for decades, is it's actually like a bacteria in the biofilm in the bladder wall. And so the ones that we look at, outside of doing what we normally do, you know, inflammation, immune system, microbiome, is that, you know, there is doctors that are special cystitis doctors, but they're looking at, you know, we have to give treatments that disrupt the biofilm in the bladder because the bacteria is actually in the in these biofilms within the tissue. So that's why when they do urine culture, negative, 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 yet it has all the symptoms of that. You know, we can calm down the inflammation easily, but we have to actually get at the underlying aspect of the what we consider, we've seen it like chronic low-grade biofilm infections in the bladder. And by a certain age, sometimes they have to do bladder washings through the urologist, but we can actually, if we work with them or there's other people who specialize it in the country, then yeah, we've seen improvement of that condition. But it's very stubborn because most of the time, like, here's just the medications and take it. And it's like, well, I still have these symptoms. It's because we're not getting it still at the underlying inflammatory aspect. In this case, that has to do with sometimes a low-grade bacterial infections in the bladder wall or under the biofilm. So when we give biofilm disruptors, then it allows the therapies either conventionally or naturally work even better.
Thanks, Dr. Pai. Up next, we have David A. David A, go ahead and unmute, please.
Hi, thank you very much. I have one question real quick. Can you describe what inflammatory markers you use when you examine patients? The only ones I'm familiar with are C-reactive protein and PSA. And my second question is did you say that the Bosmeric product that you have will help people who have vaccine reactions?
I didn't say with vaccine reactions. Well, let me answer that question specifically on the vaccine actions. Because one thing that you don't want to do when you get the vaccine, by the way, is take an antipyretic or anti-fever medication, right? Usually after the second dose, you'll get a little like a little bit of low grade. Not everybody will have it, but some people like me, I got it, you know. Just to let everybody know, I have a wonderful post antibody response, 95%. I had 33% after the first one, 95% after the second. So you got to get two, by the way, to really get that immune. Most of the other people in my office have 100% after two, which is fantastic, right? But what you want to do is you don't want to take a fever reducing medicine for the achiness that second day after that. So you don't take an ibuprofen or a Tylenol because you're actually suppressing that immune response, and you want to teach your body to learn about the COVID spike so that it can defend against future attacks and other variants. So don't take that. But it, you know, so could you take it if you're having some kind of reaction? Sure. But remember, it's not a live vaccine. We're not giving you the COVID virus. But what we're doing is when we're taking this daily, we're looking at how we can lower the infectious rate of getting COVID and actually also more importantly, the long-term sequelae of this post-inflammatory COVID long hauler syndrome. And what was the first question again? Sorry.
Let me just go
Oh,
ahead.
inflammatory markers. So inflammatory markers, just real quick, inflammatory markers. We actually get a whole cytokine panel. There's interleukins, CRP, there's all sorts of IL-10, IL-4. There's actually an inflammatory panel like the laboratories will have. And so it's just a variety of, so some of us looking at for joint inflammation, gut inflammation, cardiovascular inflammation, systemic inflammation, you know? And so, yeah, it's not just a one aspect, because remember, there's hundreds of different inflammatory markers, but mostly there's about 3 to 10 different things that we can follow.